Hello, everyone on Channel 9. It's really great to be here. My name's Mary Jo Foley. I do not work for Microsoft, but I'm a Microsoft watcher. You may know me, all about Microsoft.com. And I'm here interviewing two of my favorite people from Microsoft. I've got Steve Guggenheimer, the chief evangelist for Microsoft, and John Shuchuk, who is the chief geek for Microsoft. We're going to talk a little bit about the keynote. You guys just came off the stage. It was really exciting. People in the audience, you know, there were some questions. Did people want to see code? I think we answered that today. Yes, they did. And I wanted to hear from each of you kind of what your biggest takeaway is. Like, if people are here at Build or watching Build, what do you really want them to take away, the one big thing?
I'll start. I think, first off, it's great to see you.
Yeah,
you
too.
Thanks for hosting
us
today, coming out. It's kind of a pleasure to be interviewed by Mary Jo.
Yeah, I know, the other way around.
I feel important all of a sudden. Look, I think there's a couple things. One is, lots of times people have this perception of all or nothing.
Right.
Where it's either all Microsoft or all somebody else, and those days are gone.
Yeah.
It's not a world of all or nothing, and I think we try to show there's lots of different areas where we can add value and find places to partner, and it might be Windows, it might be Azure, it might be the Office Graph, it might be Bing, it might be something, but it's rare that we don't come across a way to collaborate and find things to do, and so the days of all or none are gone. Yeah. And then two is, look, I think back to the roots. We like working with developers.
Yep.
We actually have fun with it. We're pretty good at it. And so we're here to do that.
Yeah, I think a couple other quick things. Clearly, the company, as I've been there, has really evolved its position on incorporating lots of other technologies into solutions, whether it's open source, third-party services. So many applications are actually today stitching together these different components to create a great solution. So we're pretty excited to be able to show some of those examples and then show partners who are really using our platform in that way to deliver on it. And clearly, the other big one, just the ubiquity of data throughout the platform. I think Joseph did a fantastic job kind of highlighting the importance of data, not just as a way to collect information, but really to understand it and act on it.
Yeah. Well, I'm dying to ask you guys about what I think was one of the most interesting things at the conference, the announcement that Microsoft's going out, talking now to Android developers and iOS developers and trying to bring them into the Windows 10 fold. I'm curious, like, what are you gonna go out and say to developers?
So, well, we have been.
Yeah, I mean, but okay, so what's the elevator pitch? What do you go and say to an Android developer why they should come to the Windows platform?
Well, I don't usually think of developers as sort of an Android developer. They're usually mobile developers. They're trying to build apps for devices, or they're building apps for something specifically. So usually the conversation comes down to, hey, we have a great platform that allows you to do some unique things. We actually have a volume at scale. Especially when you think about Windows 10 and aggregating all the devices together. The trick then is, how do we make it as easy as possible for you to move on to the platform and take advantage of it? And so if they've written code in Android, they have an Android mobile app, or they've got an iOS app, that's a potential bridge into the platform. So usually the conversation is a balance between, let's talk about the scale of the platform, let's talk about some of the unique things we offer, and then let's talk about the easiest way for you to get onto the platform, and then over time we can talk about the unique things you can do.
Yeah, I mean, often when we've sat down with, say, an iOS developer, and we've had the conversation that Googs just described, there's often a little bit of skepticism about, oh, could we really do this? And so we've sat down with a number of folks, taken their code, run it through the compiler, generated that Windows application, and I think for some people it's almost like a magic trick. They're like, no way, I can't believe that it's actually working. But an important thing happens, which is, they see the app now running on Windows, they see the potential, they understand, oh, maybe we could reduce my cost to develop. And so in a lot of ways, I think these bridges are the door openers that enable the conversation about what we could do with that billion customers, what we could do with the value-added features.
So now let me flip the question, because this is something I'm hearing a lot from the existing Microsoft developers, the existing Windows development community. I guess the question is, why shouldn't they be afraid of you guys doing this? So suddenly, here come all these Android developers, here come all these iOS developers, and now they're competing with these people who've been loyal to the platform and have been developing for Windows for years. Like, what is their advantage still as a Windows developer?
Well, look, at the end of the process, we're really looking for great Windows applications. Universal Windows platform gives you this ability to create these apps that span all of these different devices. And at the tool set that people have developed, whether it be in .NET or with XAML, those are things that kind of show through. Now, interestingly, we've sat down with some of these folks. We've moved some, say, Android code over or some iOS code. In many cases, people look at this and they think, you know, I might want to redo my user interface more natively to be able to take advantage of some of that scaling capability, because you guys are providing some incredible things about, for example, different input modes across these devices. Think about how tricky it is to build an app that can run on a phone and on an Xbox, and be able to do that. So they want to take advantage of that toolkit.
Yep.
I think the other side of the conversation is the things that people find the most interesting or exciting, like look at the conference, HoloLens just gets an incredible reception.
Right.
That requires a Universal Windows app ultimately. So the developers that are already there, great, they have a head start on moving on to or across the various devices. And then for other developers, look, the more apps on the platform, the better off the platform is, the better it is for the ecosystem. Rising tide raises all boats. So I think in our case, it's how do we get as many experiences that our users want onto the platform? And if it requires a bridge to help people get there, we feel pretty good that once they start, there's other things they're going to want to do, which will just, you know, sort of, I'll say, bring them further into the Windows conversation or into that broader community.
Yeah. I mean, really, there's the fundamental shift that's going on here is we're just trying to reach out to everybody on every platform and make it easier. We want them to be able to bring their code, and we're trying to get out of the mode that I think the industry was in for a while, saying, hey, you must do things this way.
Right. We've had this conversation privately before, but I'd love to hear you explain more about what with Windows 10 is going to be more interesting to developers all up. And it kind of comes down to money, right? Like, what are you guys going to do with Windows 10 that you didn't do with 7 and 8 to help developers make more money?
Well, I'll start. First off, I'll say it's important to say we want to help developers do what they care about for their app.
Right.
And in some cases, that's monetization. There's lots of B2C apps that do other things. So I think and people measure different ways. But let's take the money one.
Okay.
First off, you want to aggregate as many users as possible.
Right.
And so the ability to take the Windows 10 for us, the PC base, which is our largest, plus phone, plus Xbox, and be able to create an experience and aggregate that volume, step one is volume. The second thing is actually getting them into the app. And I think the interesting part there is if you look at the phone, people are used to going to a store on a phone. And on Xbox, they're used to the dashboard. The trick now is with Windows 10 on the desktop or the PC is how do we get people into the store there? And so that's some of what Joe was showing off yesterday.
Yeah.
That ability to use the start button and the pane there to help people find applications. The ability to use Cortana. The ability to have a rotating tile for the store. So I think what we're working on doing over time is making the desktop or the PC as interesting in terms of going to the store and finding apps as all the other devices. So now you have an aggregation of volume. You have a way or a methodology that you're going to use to try and get people into the app, and then it's all about payment instruments. So we talked about the ability to do credit card billing across the PC, across all the devices. You look at other payment instruments. You look at different types of payment models. I talked a little bit with Shazam today about the ability to link from a web experience-based app into the store, referral programs. So I think we're going to run the gamut from scale first, getting into the app second, allowing monetization third.
Okay.
So anything I missed on that?
Totally agree. Those are all the things that developers look at when we're talking about money. On the other side of the house, there's a bunch of technical capabilities that I think are increasingly exciting to people. For example, the deep linking Joe showed from Cortana directly down into the app, or that Kevin showed right into the middle of the game.
Yep.
Having intelligence in the system to be able to help you find apps, to be able to help you get your day-to-day jobs done, I think it's going to be an increasingly important part of the way people interact with their computers.
Okay. I've been talking to a few developers who are a little bit skeptical about the universal platform message. And here's what they're skeptical about. They believe that you can do the one code, one store, common set of APIs. Like, they believe all that. But their skepticism is more about, why would I want to? And the example is, you know, someone who develops an app expressly for Windows Phone or phones, and they don't really see a case for putting it on Xbox or HoloLens or Surface Hub, right? And so what do you say to that? I mean, what is it kind of, well, you don't have to if you don't want to, or do you see a case where you could kind of explain to them why they should think of that?
It's a little bit of both.
Okay.
I mean, we end up talking to a lot of developers. Some developers think, yeah. You know, it's mobile volume first.
Right.
Great, let's have that conversation. Let's talk about how we can do that. Picking up another device easily may be interesting, maybe not.
Right.
The nice thing there is we also allow them to keep their experience rich, so your UI elements are going to change based on the screen size. But the nice thing is when you write your manifest or create your manifest, if you want to do phone only, you can.
Yep.
If you want to do phone and Xbox, not PC, you can.
Yep.
So you have the choice, and then you sort of pick up the others for free.
Yep.
Then you get into, hey, if I'm really phone only, well, what are the things we can think about? And so you take some of the stuff Joseph, you know, was showing for machine learning on the back end.
Yep.
There's some things that Harry Shum and his team have worked on for photos, for example.
Yep.
Image recognition. So how can we add value that might be different from that universal store? Maybe it's on the Azure side, maybe it's on some of the other pieces. Let's talk about new phones and what's going on the phone market. So there's a variety of conversations we can have. You're not required, it's not all or nothing.
Okay.
You can decide the devices you want to do, and so it depends on what they're working on.
Could you even decide, I want machine learning with this app, but I don't want it on my version that's on a different platform?
Absolutely.
Sure. So you can pick and choose that way.
And
too.
Not only that, one of the things developers have told us is very important is the ability to independently rev those different platforms. And so, for example, maybe they've advanced a long way on the phone, but that same app might be really great for, say, showing photo albums or other kinds of things on Xbox.
Okay.
But you don't want to have to do all the testing and that kind of stuff. In some of the other platforms, you kind of get stuck doing an all or nothing.
Yeah. Right.
Here we can manage that stuff independently.
Yeah. And I met with a developer yesterday, well-known, and they care about tablet and the PC. So they want to do tablet PC, and their feedback was, look, phone's interesting, Xbox is interesting, let's do this really great first, and it's nice that I can do those others, but it's not necessarily what I want to do. It's like, great, let's have that conversation. Let's do a great job here first.
Okay.
And if we can figure out use cases, let's do that.
Okay.
An example where this occurs all the time is particularly around creative or editing kind of capabilities.
Okay.
Those tend to be on the PC. And then often what ends up happening is that the versions on other platforms, on Xbox or on the phone, tend to be more about the browsing experience of that content.
Yeah. Another thing I talked to a few people here about that they were really excited about was bringing Win32 apps to the store.
Yes.
I know, it sounds like, oh,
hey,
well.
No. 700,000 of those plus still out there. We love them.
I know.
Yeah, you heard the numbers from Terry. It's huge.
Right, it's huge. But the question I'm getting a lot is, how is that actually happening? Because I've heard some people say sandboxing, some say AppV.
Yeah, well, we mentioned AppV in the keynotes today.
Right. I mean, but what do you have to change as a developer of a Win32 app to bring it into the store?
Go ahead, start.
Well, again, the primary thing that AppV is doing is it's providing a level of indirection into many of the system calls that historically have wired an app in deeply to the operating system. And that deep wiring can sometimes cause the system to become increasingly unstable over time. So really, what the AppV container is giving you is that true degree of isolation so that from a user standpoint, I can install and uninstall, and I feel good about the experience. We're also doing a bunch of work to ensure that Win32 code can then take advantage of the new modern capabilities.
Okay.
And that's been difficult before, and one of the keys to that is actually to have a store identity so that all of those system APIs which required to know what app is being used, now those apps have a store identity and they can make the entirety of the call change.
The other piece that goes with that then is creating a store app. So creating a manifest, allowing the code to be checked so it doesn't have inappropriate content in it or things that you wouldn't want. So there's the technical side of enabling use of the new APIs and protecting the system from not running well, and then there's protecting the end user from inappropriate content. And that's sort of what the store's brought into play.
Another question on the store that is both a question about things as they stand now and things with Windows 10. So especially on Windows Phone, and I'm a Windows Phone user, one of the 3%. I'm worried because I'm seeing some apps disappear from the store, things like Chase and Bank of America, like very key apps. And I am wondering what you guys think you can do to bring these apps back.
Well, let's take those two. We talk to them pretty regularly.
Yep.
It's a good conversation. Banks are an interesting category where they have a lot of regulatory compliance. And so the notion of keeping an app up where, A, it's not have as high a volume as others, and B, they know we're going to Windows 10 and there's other options, that's sort of the real conversation there. So with the conversations we have, it's we we're not happy when we lose things from the store. I'm a user of both of their both of their banks. Yeah. But at the same time, the conversation we move to is, what's the right model for the go forward? And so our energy right now with all of the developers is, what's the go forward?
Yep.
We talk to Bank of America and Chase pretty regularly. And so that's the dialogue, which is, I think they see the value, in particular around the website. If you look at banks, they do it. Look, they have these great web experiences.
Right.
The notion of responsive design, web-based, it just makes sense for them.
Yeah.
So the question then is, how do we go forward?
Right.
How do we bridge between now and then? Sometimes we lose a few, but the goal now is to move them forward and get to Windows 10 and use things they would naturally do anyway.
Yeah, because when people ask me about it, they always say, you know, why doesn't Microsoft just pay them, or they can give them developers to do the apps for them? But it's not really that case that way, right?
No, I mean, look, these are good partners. These are folks we work with pretty regularly. The notion of keeping an app going and putting investment against it when you know you're going to change to a different one, it's a trade-off of resources, which we all make, and we help. Like, we'll provide developer code to developers to help them code the new one. But it's just a logical you know, trade-off that we all make. It's a business decision.
Right.
And they're still good partners.
Sure.
We're still working with them.
Okay,
and,
good
and
to hear.
Have faith. We'll get those get those working together.
Okay, good. Maybe we'll take some listener and watcher questions. We've got people watching live on Channel 9, and they're submitting questions on Reddit also. I see a question here from Chuck, who wants to know about universal apps. And he said, yesterday, there was really no mention of JavaScript HTML5.
Hopefully we answered that today.
Today we heard it on the keynote stage, right? But he's wondering about how Microsoft sees JavaScript HTML5 WinJS for Win 10 universal apps. Like, where's the place, where does it fit in?
Look, again, we go back to that conversation about, if people have code, we want to help them get to the platform. And one of the bridges that we announced yesterday, and we really focused on a lot today, was that ability to take web content, turn that into an app with this new W3C manifest. But even more importantly, when that app is running, that JavaScript is running inside the app, it can reach out to the new APIs, and it can do things like toasts and notifications. And we showed that today. We're very committed to this. You know, we're just back to some of these bank-style apps.
Back to your bank conversation.
And so we
actually end up having a lot of conversations. On the PC side in particular, there's a lot of people who think sort of web or app. And having the opportunity to say, hey, I can have my web experience become an app and keep that code the same, it's actually a very good conversation.
So we
HTML5 and JavaScript, it's sort of core to many of the conversations we have.
Yeah, a great example in the bank conversation
is,
it's web apps can be used for a lot of that. But guess what? When you want to go do that check deposit, you got to be able to call out to the camera.
Yeah.
And that's where this whole new web bridge really gives you the power to build those kind of apps. We talked about one today as well, Shazam.
Right.
You want to do that audio listening? That's a web app using the audio listening.
Let's do another question. Data Juggler asks, ever be able to sell a WinForms app in the store?
Look, to the extent that it can be ingested as a Win32 app,
it
follows the same conversation we had earlier. There's work you have to do on the technical side. You have to, you know, create a manifest and follow the rules. But there's nothing that sort of separates out WinForms and says, no, that won't work.
Now, I just want to put a caveat on there, just so that everybody understands. In order to run that Win32 code, it requires some of the desktop subsystems. So you shouldn't expect, for example, that WinForms app is going to run, for example, on a Raspberry Pi.
Right. It does separate the apps that we can bring onto the platform from ones that I'll think about as a universal Windows platform app. Because if I go to the phone, which runs a different processor around the subsystems, not necessarily going to work there. And so that's, I think, to John's point.
Yeah.
You can get into the store.
We don't want to oversell.
You may not be across all devices at that point.
Now, that said, we're hearing a lot of excitement from the developers about this ability to take their Win32 apps and bring them to the App Store.
Related question from me is, you know, you guys talk so much these days now about open source, and even make it part of your keynotes, and you're integrating it in various places and tools, you're working with that community. And I'm kind of curious, what do you get out of that? Like, I understand in some ways why Microsoft is doing this, but what What's kind of the motivation for you guys getting involved here? Are you hoping to get people who have kind of ignored the Microsoft platform because you aren't open source to come to the platform, or is it something different?
I don't think there's anything other than the most basic fact that a lot of people leverage open source technologies to go build their applications.
Right.
And so if we, for some reason, had this view, oh no, we don't want open source technologies on our platform, I think we'd be making it very hard for people to advance.
Okay.
The other thing that we're seeing is just a massive amount of innovation in the open source community. I talked about JavaScript frameworks today. I mean, the rate of advance and sophistication, even if you were to go back 5 years ago, there was no Angular, there was no Ember, there was no React.
Right.
I mean, the level of excitement and energy that the community is putting into these open source projects, we love being part of that. You know, I was just having this great conversation with Chris from GitHub about how, from his perspective, it's just been kind of mind-blowing working with Microsoft and seeing the transition. He was kind of laughing. He's like, often when I want to tell people about how you should go do some of the open source projects, you guys are actually a pretty good example these days, which I can't, it's hard for me to imagine saying
Microsoft.
That. Yeah. Yeah.
Right. Well, I think the other thing here is, you know, Terry used the term building bridges.
Right.
Look, it's about meeting developers where they are.
Yeah.
The world is so complex today. There's, you know, so many more places to be. And so saying, hey, you can only go this way,
it
doesn't work that well. And so if we're going to, you know, build on our history and work with developers, you got to meet them where they are.
True. Well, you guys were out of time, but thank
that
you.
Went quick.
It went quick. And I have to have you show off your shirt.
All right.
Steve, because we're all Ninja Cat
yes,
here.
Yes, that was my, I got some comments last year on my rugby jersey, so this year I did a custom.
Yep,
and,
it's awesome.
This one's kind of fun, so I think I'll keep it.
Yep.
And next
Thank
year,
you.
The only thing that's coming to my head right now is, what am I doing with the cow next year on the rugby jersey?
Oh, yeah,
that's,
I know.
That's my teaser.
Next year.
More cow.
More cow.
More cow.
All right, thank you guys very much.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.